Just lay down here, all right? Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well. Amen.
Come on.
So first, a warm welcome to our distinguished guests. Their attention spans are about in line with my own, so I'll try my best to keep things somewhat brief today. And my own distinguished guest here just gave me one request that I gave a shout out to Sarge's Animal Shelter in Waynesville, North Carolina. They do a special discount if you're buying a hound. It's $100 off. If you're buying a hound who's been returned twice, they're free. Unfortunately, the rest of the sermon is not as funny. October 3rd,
here, Billy.
October 3rd, 2022, ABC 13 News. It's like starting from square one, homeless say, as more camps close in Asheville. January 10th, 2022, Asheville Free Press. Asheville officials removed more than 20 homeless camps in 2021. January 2nd, 2022, U.S. News. Asheville homeless camps cleared. No idea what comes next. April 17th, 2021, Asheville Citizen Times. Aston Park. City clears another homeless camp. March 29th, 2021, Asheville Citizen Times. Cherry Street homeless camp will be removed. We have no idea what comes next. Clearly, this headline is incorrect. We do have an idea of what comes next. These very same people inevitably will move somewhere else, and these very same agencies will inevitably post a 24-hour removal notice on their tents, and these very same news sources will again report on the issue with a redundant headline, and the very same process again will be repeated. Now, just this past week, multiple camps across the city were yet again cleared. Many people received these 24-hour removal notices in the hours leading up to a forecasted tropical storm. Amy Cantrell of Beloved described the scene, lamenting all over. We were seeing people packing not to get out of the storm, but to move. People are literally scrambling. We saw people trying to move things in shopping carts and trash bags. There were no shelter options for folks. While most people were at Ingles getting their bread and milk, as I've learned Southerners often do, or planning how they might have a comfy night hunkering down in the rain, these unfortunate neighbors of ours were trying to figure out where they might hide, where they might go that would evade detection. They were plotting how to best exist in the shadows so that their existence might be tolerated at all. In today's gospel, we find ourselves in an ancient story of wandering and uprooting too, as we are told that Jesus on his way to Jerusalem is traveling between Samaria and Galilee. Each of these places, for their own reasons, were home to people outside of society's power structures. And here, as Jesus enters what is described only as an unknown village, he comes upon a group of 10 lepers. The lepers let out a cry to Jesus, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And Jesus replies to the group, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." Now, on its surface, this may seem a peculiar response. We imagine that Jesus' directives must be unique, given that he's, Jesus, but he's giving these 10 matter-of-fact information. This is what anyone with leprosy would do to be cleansed. In this time and in this place, lepers were people with a broad array of skin conditions. They lived in colonies because they were required to keep physical distance between themselves and those without the disease. They even had to shout unclean as they walked by someone so that they would know not to venture closer. Not a physician, but a priest would determine when a leper had been cleansed and when the appropriate sacrifices had been offered. So there's nothing novel here about the advice that Jesus gives the leper. His suggestion instead is just the standard protocol of the day. So we're told that each of these 10 lepers then are healed by this process. The gospel reads, "And as they went, they were made clean." And unlike most instances in the gospel, Jesus had little to nothing to do with this particular healing episode. He simply gave the lepers directions. And yet the one Samaritan leper returns to Jesus in thanksgiving. And when the foreigner does return, Jesus leaves him with these curious parting words: "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." Your faith has made you well. Not the evaluation, not the cleansing from the priest, nor the allotted sacrifice, not even the sound advice given by Jesus had made this leper well, but ultimately the foreigner's faith made him well. Now, we could quickly assume that this is an ode to the legitimacy of faith healing, but there's one small problem here with that. The other 9, who showed not faith but entitlement, were healed too. The crux of this story, then, I think, is that there are 2 types of healing presented here. The foreigner wasn't just healed of his disease in some mechanical, material way. The foreigner instead was made well. And perhaps what this gospel suggests to us is that the curing of disease is secondary here. The real work and the real reward came in his being made well, in showing gratitude for the life that lied before him and for the God who had created him and all that surrounded him. In work on reorienting our spirit so that when good fortune befalls, our attitude is not of entitlement, but of thanks. This message from the gospel, too, has a lot to say about what's happening around town now. We tend to believe that we are entitled to what we have, to our homes, our education, our jobs, that we earned it. It feels good to believe that good things have happened to us because of us, because we're good. This belief must be supported, though, by a notion that other people lack the good things that we have because they didn't do the good things that we did. We don't have to live like that because we don't deserve to. We're entitled to something better. But now others are not entitled to better because they didn't earn it. They didn't deserve it. In this ego-driven framework, we find a way to conveniently rationalize the suffering of human beings. But that's only true to an extent. We only rationalize it to an extent, because somewhere in our minds, for some bubbling at the surface and for others deep in the recesses of the conscience, we know that this framework is untrue. That is why homeless encampments are such a problem. It's why there's no real solution, why newspapers keep writing week after week as camps in place after place are squelched. The fact is that the fact that the camps exist is not what so disrupts our public consciousness. It's that we have to see them. That's a shame. But as Father Philip Berrigan astutely noted, the poor tell us who we are, the prophets tell us who we could be. So we hide our poor and we kill our prophets. The problem is that we have to see them. But more than seeing them, the problem is that in seeing them, we have to see ourselves. But now, the problem is that we are rubbing up against a time in our city where the poor are in too great a number to hide them anymore. There are too many to hide. And we are reckoning then with who we all are, with what we make acceptable in our world. Now, the good news of this moment is that there's an opportunity here to be healed. And I'm not talking about healing in the go to the priest sense of the term. This is not remedied by some 10-point plan, by a budget line item or a task force or a 2030 forecast. Those things are all well and good, but we're unfortunately not even there yet. We're suffering not from a crisis of strategy. We're suffering from a crisis of values. We do not need to be healed right now. We need to be made well. Amen.